everybody. Welcome to the Ann and After Show. It's me, Lindsay Leverage, and with me is James Beckett.
Hey.
If you were here on Friday, you may have seen the winter trailer watch party that we had Dopio Dropsite, the VTuber from Niji Sanji EN, on there. If you were on YouTube, it went down for the weekend because of a copyright issue that has now been resolved. So it's back up on the YouTube. If you want to watch it there, it'd be great if you guys could share it for anyone who might have missed it and whatnot. If they missed the opportunity over the weekend, they can still check in before the season premieres. We're also up on Twitter and Facebook as well. And if you go to animenewsnetwork.com and look at the marquee, which is that big banner on the top, you can find all the video links and stuff there. So that's like a quick, easy way to share it. So just wanted to give that reminder. But James, I'm glad to have you back because there was a ton of news that came out of Jump Festa over last week. So much so that we can't share it all within our little news segment. I currently have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 tabs open of things to talk about, including a couple of trailers. Out of those ones, though, which one caught your attention?
Oh, I want to check out some. I'm going to check out some trailers.
Do you want to check out some trailers? Yeah. The one that caught my attention first is we finally got another trailer and some confirmation about the Chainsaw Man movie. Yeah. And I am no longer concerned about anything.
Nope.
It's gonna rule, you guys. So for those who don't know, you know, we got the wonderful, fantastic Chainsaw Man TV series that came out in
22,
I believe. Yeah. And we've been waiting for the next arc, which is going to be a movie. This is called the Reze arc. It's named after the female character that appears in this. And at Jump Festa on Sunday, they showed the second official teaser for the arc, as well as some new key visuals. And what this confirms is that the director of the film is Tatsuya Yoshihara, who, for those who don't know, he previously worked as a storyboarder, key animator, and episode director on the TV series. So that's a relief already. He storyboarded episode 4 and 10, directed episode 4 and 10, and was also action director and did key animation on episode 1, 2, and 12, according to our encyclopedia. So based on the teaser I'm going to show you guys, I think we can all rest at ease that even though the director of the first season has moved on to other things, the movie looks pretty good. So let's show that.
Yeah, my biggest worry was that they weren't going to be able to maintain enough kind of continuity with the style of the first season, which I know is controversial.
Yes.
And I think in this trailer, they definitely do seem to be making it feel like a little more anime in certain respects. But I think the weight of the character movement, the cinematic framing, the lighting, the line work, it all still looks gorgeous. And so if it gets a little more like stylized and a little less quote unquote grounded, that's okay.
Yeah.
As long as they didn't try to turn it into like a Studio Trigger anime or something.
Yeah.
That was my big worry, was that it was just gonna overcorrect.
Yeah. I do think the lighting and everything that we're seeing in here so far still has a really great cinematic quality to it. Started out with a lot of gentler scenes here before we get to Chainsaw Man literally riding on the back of a shark.
Guys, this movie is going to whip so much ass. If you haven't read the manga, just know that Chainsaw Man does not drop off.
No.
It's actually just only ever been great.
Chapter,
so.
Yeah, this arc is super intense. Denji remains cursed as always, unfortunately. But I'm hoping what we get out of it, the movie, because it's got a 2025 release date, is a near simultaneous theatrical release.
Please, Lord in heaven.
Please.
Anime Jesus, I beg you. If I gotta wait like 2 or 3 months, that's fine.
Yeah. But
we've been getting too spoiled lately, and we gotta keep that train rolling. We can't go back to the bad old days of maybe you'll get to watch the new Evangelion film 3 years after it came out in Japan.
Right.
And they had to redo the dub.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, those were the bad days. I'm hoping that we get something pretty close to simultaneous release for this.
I guess the bad days were actually like in the 80s when
it just didn't happen at all. Yeah.
And you had to hope to find like a Taiwanese bootleg with like readable English hard-coded subtitles that said like VHS in the back of a Blockbuster somewhere or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mark, the top fabricator, points out that the director of this is one of the best action directors working right now and did some of the best episodes of Black Clover and was the director of Wistoria.
Oh, yeah, Wistoria. Yeah.
And which I remember looking, looked really, really good.
I forgot that show existed and I reviewed it.
You did. Yeah, you reviewed it weekly.
When I saw that word, I was like, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, Wistoria.
Harry Potter with the big sword.
Yeah, and the goggles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hero goggles.
Yeah. So that's the latest on Chainsaw Man, the Reze arc film. Some of these I can run through pretty quickly. James, I just wanted to give you a shout out as one of the handful of people who really, really liked Mission Yozakura Family.
That show is nice.
Yeah, show is nice. Pleasant. Yeah. They are releasing the second season in 2026. So you're going to have to wait at least a whole year for that.
Okay.
Yeah. This time next year, maybe it'll be coming out soon. It could be October 2026 for all I know. They haven't said.
Technically, it could be December 31st.
2026. Yeah. It very well could be. So I just wanted to give them a shout out. There's a cute little image for this.
Are they doing the time skip?
I don't think so. It looks the same age as where we left off at, right? I think that's the only news that came out about Mission Yozakura Family specifically, but just want to throw that out.
If y'all are itching for an anime rom-com action thing, now that Dandadan is on its break, I'm not going to pretend that Mission Yozakura Family is in the same tier as Dandadan. It's not even really in the same zip code, but you know, they've like crossed paths maybe at a distance for a couple of seconds and like acknowledged each other, which was really cool of Dandadan to do that because Mission Yozakura Family is a very humble little show, but it's got some cute vibes. I like it.
Yeah. For those of you who really enjoyed Kaiju number 8, we have a release window for that one now. So the Kaiju number 8 second season, that's coming out July, 2025.
All right. So not too long.
Not too long.
I'm excited. Yep.
Now we know another anime is coming out in July, 2025 though. Season 2 of Dandadan is July 2023.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay, yeah.
Yeah. That's so these are going to be airing simultaneously, I think. You know, Shonen Action fans will be eating pretty good. We'll talk more about the upcoming Dandadan season when we get to talk about the episode.
I feel like Kaiju number 8 didn't have the... Maybe it's just because Dandadan has been such a force in this last quarter of the year. But I feel like just in all the conversations we've been having and seeing online about the best shows of the year and all the shows that like really stuck with people, I feel like Kaiju number 8 is kind of faded into the background. I think that's a little hyperbolic, but it hasn't necessarily had like the fandom cultural impact that maybe...
I felt like it never really found its legs. Mm. Like, and I think viewership numbers might disagree on this. It could be something that everyone just watched but didn't really talk about, which is... a thing.
The first season, it took a while to get to the stakes, you know, with him being like found out and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And that really didn't happen till the very end.
Yeah, it was pretty close to the end. It had great action sequences throughout. Its ensemble cast was pretty good. He had that sort of mentorish relationship with the younger girl.
With not Asuka.
Yeah, with not Asuka. There was the captain guy was pretty cool. There was the quiet, stoic love interest who he was trying to meet her expectations. There were the two boyfriends.
The two boyfriends.
So the cast of it was all pretty good. I think it wasn't quite funny. I mean, there was the one scene with him running and oozing out of his nipples or whatever, but it wasn't
I think it just feels like it almost has a similar problem to... Oh my gosh, now I'm forgetting the name of it. The evil Power Ranger.
Oh, Go-Go Loser Ranger?
Thank you, Go-Go Loser Ranger.
It's okay. This is the only thing my brain uses power for. It's...
For remembering, all the titles of every show.
Yeah.
But with Go-Go Loser Ranger, I also felt with that show, especially because that season spent so long in like its underground parking lot fight.
Yeah.
I think both of those shows, by the time it ended, it felt like this, the storyline of the show was just getting started.
Yeah.
And then it just cuts off right when things are starting to feel like they're picking up.
Yeah. And I know that Go Go Loser Ranger did find, you know, some fans for it, but it was another one like Mission Yozakura Family that was stuck on Hulu.
Yeah.
Which just doesn't really seem to be working.
Well, reading that article that came out about Crunchyroll and just the wonderful, incredibly competent and functional and consistent management going on.
If you guys haven't read that, you need to go to Bloomberg and read it right now. Yeah. It is a lot.
It's a lot.
It's a lot.
Especially for people in the industry and that think about anime for a living. The thought that Amazon and Disney are just going to get more and more licenses is awful because they're not doing anything to promote those shows, and they're not going to do anything because their approach seems to be, oh, we'll just stick it on our platform and then money.
In fairness, I was having this exact conversation about the promotional aspect with someone else, and we talked about that Crunchyroll actually isn't doing a lot for promo either. It's just that's all that's there. They have the large audience for that.
They haven't had to do that much promo
because
they've been the only game in town for years, especially with the Funimation merger, which is a problem in and of itself.
Right.
You know, we all saw that email about, let's just not promote Dandadan, guys.
So
the biggest anime of the year that's getting millions and millions of views amongst normal people, which is the dream.
QQ, MBS didn't give us the exclusive this time, so we're going to try and bury it. Yes, that was specifically about their current marketing head. But one of the things to notice is that, and since we're talking about a lot of Shonen Jump shows right now, is that Crunchyroll used to have the Shonen Jump stuff in the bag. It was the place to go once they got Naruto, which was around the time that they went legit. That was one of the first things you could rely on them on, is to have the big Shonen Jump adaptations. And I've noticed within the last year or so that stuff's going over to Netflix. They're either sharing it with Netflix or Netflix is just getting it. So Dandadan was shared.
Netflix has freaking One Piece right now, which is...
Netflix has One Piece, and they're going to have the One Piece remake, and they have the One Piece live action. And I also know they also have Sakamoto Days, which is coming out this season. That's a Netflix show, and the trailer for that looks freaking amazing. It looks like it's really good, right?
I mean, they have Dandadan, technically.
They have Dandadan. They have Dr. Stone. At least they have the first two seasons of Dr. Stone as well. So I don't know if... And if you read that article, they talk about Crunchyroll using assets in ways that the original mangaka for certain series, they don't name which series, which mangaka, made them mad. So this is only speculation, but I have to wonder if that has led to going over to Netflix for a lot of these things. Because for a while, the only anime Netflix really seemed to get was stuff that they produced themselves. And a lot of those weren't very good. Be the Beginning and stuff like that when that was coming out. Yeah. And now...
They got Pluto and Beastars.
They got Beastars. And I mean, High Dive is doing okay. Their offerings are still really small and within... It seems to mostly be within a particular niche. Like something is particularly etchy on the etchy side. It tends to go over to High Dive.
Showtime, you know?
They're starting to feel like the Showtime. But not everything they get is that way either. Like they had How I Ended Up at an All Guys Mixer. Mm-hmm. So they also get stuff that's like a little more.
I mean, they had Oshinoko.
And
that was their big get for.
Yes. Which I have heard reliably was because Crunchyroll passed on it.
God. Can you imagine? I feel like the current leadership might have been the type to say, who cares that much about Attack on Titan the final season, right? Like, that's old news. Like, that's not a big deal.
Yeah.
You know? And then it became, like, the most globally demanded show on the planet for a couple of weeks there.
I feel like with Oshinoko, it was like, oh, well, it's just another idol show. Idol shows don't perform that well. And typically, idol shows are very niche. But Oshinoko is not just an idol show. It's not
live. And also, since when has Crunchyroll turned down a bad idol show? I've seen a lot of bad idol shows on Crunchyroll. Right. Imagine having a great one.
Yeah. Yeah. And it quickly became the most streamed series on HIDIVE. Yeah. So go read the Bloomberg article. It's got great reporting. There's at least, I think, 18 different unnamed CR employees that talk about just how Crunchyroll has lost the plot. And that includes some retaliatory tactics against these Japanese companies like they did with Don Dadon. And it's just...
Well, it's a good thing that Japanese companies are not known to hold grudges.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Just that historically that grudges and being disrespected are not things that Japanese companies care very much about.
Yeah. Right, no.
And, you know, I think it's worth mentioning because we've joked about Netflix jail for so long, but there really isn't a Netflix jail anymore. They're doing weekly releases. I've been watching Blue Box. And I know that it's like a week behind, I think. It's on a true simulcast.
For Blue Box? Way.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Or something, because I keep seeing like the episode discussions on Reddit and stuff are always a week ahead. And so I don't know if it's just getting like leaked every week. That seems a little odd.
For folks who wanted to know the article, I put it in the chat on Bloomberg. It may be pay to read, but if you go to Bloomberg Business Canada affiliate, it's on there for free. Okay. You know, so do what you got to do. It'll just continue to be interesting. If I'm not going to complain about one of the platforms losing its near monopoly on licensing, a lot of that I feel like has to do with Crunchyroll being directly on the production committees for a lot of these shows. So they are in some ways directly funding or in part a lot of these productions that are coming out every year, quite a few of them being isekai, but also a lot of other series. And I don't know, I think if their heads got a little too big, that might be one of the first things we see cut back on, is just not directly funding quite as many shows.
I'm not opposed to the distribution of power in the sphere. I think we need that. Mm-hmm. I do, however, wish that the entire media landscape weren't being poisoned by venture capitalist idiots that don't know what the hell they're doing. I wish that the people running these streaming services knew how to market a show and also gave a shit about marketing Japanese anime. Because that's the biggest problem. A show goes on Hulu, it dies. Like, I mean, at this point, that's predictable.
When it comes to Hulu and Disney Plus, the heavy lifter for most of its marketing has been Ruben Lack, who's just a dub producer over there. So if you want to find out what the heck's going on with the show on those platforms, follow Ruben Lack on social media because he'll give updates. It's not an official channel. That's not even technically his job. All right. Should we get back to this Jump Festa stuff a little bit?
Oh, yeah.
So we talked about Takobi's Original Sin last time we were on here, the super sad one about the alien who starts giving like magic tools to this poor bullied child. And I reread
Natsuki's Doraemon.
Yes. Basically. I reread some of the manga and it reminded me that there is a time travel aspect to it. Anyone who's sensitive to self-harm should probably avoid this entirely because that's the first big major thing that happens within the series before there's a time loop to try and prevent it. Mm-hmm. And in the manga, it's intense. Like the framing of that scene is really intense and shocking.
You remember, this is not a quality comparison by any means, but do you remember that movie, The Butterfly Effect?
Oh, yes. I think we've talked about it on the show.
The tone of this story gives me big Butterfly Effect vibes.
Sure. Yeah. God, that movie is like, that movie was a lot.
Yeah, it was.
It was a heck of a lot. So with all of that being said, I'm going to show this 1 minute teaser for it. The content that I was just talking about is not in this teaser. It feels important to let you know, because if you went just off this promotional video and then went and saw the movie, you wouldn't expect some of the content that's in it. So here is the first promotional video for Takobi's Original Sin. The voice actor for Takobi like completely nails how I interpreted their voice in my head while reading the manga.
like a little tricksy, but like also, you know, earnest.
Takobi is completely earnest. It has no context for the suffering that the main character is going through. Does not understand like the severity of anything that's going on, and at least for quite a while during the beginning of the story, does not give them the gadgets under the assumption that they're going to do anything with them other than something really mundane.
Whimsical.
Yeah, whimsical. So that I think that aspect of it is actually part of what makes it difficult, is because Shizuka, who's the main character, is suffering. There, she lives with her mom and her dog. Her mom is a sex worker, and one of her mom's clients is one of Shizuka's classmates' dads, who also is married. So Shizuka's being bullied mercilessly because her mom is a home wrecker sort of situation. And the girl who's bullying her, she's always seeing how much her mother is suffering due to the actions of Shizuka's mother. So that's what's going on in the background. But obviously Shizuka has no control or anything over this. She's alone most of the time because her mother is out late and things like that. But it all escalates to a really horrible situation. And then there's the time travel aspect that gets brought into it. And Takobi starts giving Shizuka different gadgets in hopes that she'll like become friends with her bully and they can work things out, because she has no concept that bullying exists. That she just thinks they had a fight. So it's really hard, like emotionally, to read, because you
want to intervene and you want to explain, and
you want to explain to this innocent being what's really going on, and you can't, and you want to alleviate Shizuka's suffering and you can't. So yeah, it's very, very difficult. And I'm sure the movie will be like hell to watch.
I mean, if dead demons, dead destruction taught us anything, it's that the traumatized victims of bullying should always be given godlike powers and devices with capabilities beyond their control, because it will only ever end in smiles.
Exactly. Moving on from that low note as far as tone, Jump Festa did also reveal that Blue Box is getting a second season. This actually might have already been known, but they released a video for it. So the second half is going to start right away on January.
I was going to say, I thought it was already announced to be like a two core.
Yeah. Thing. So, yeah. So there'll be a new opening song, new ending song. I need to catch up on this show.
It's so cute.
I'm taking a couple weeks off in January, and I think all I'm going to do is catch up on anime from last year that I didn't finish, like Blue Box. So
it might honestly work a little bit better even getting to binge it in chunks, because the only real issue I've had with it, because the production's been immaculate, the character writing is for the most part really, really good.
Yeah.
But it's taken a really long time for Chinatsu, the female character,
to
feel involved in her own romance story. The anime is very much, it's much more from Taiki's perspective. And because to him, she's kind of difficult to read and she seems kind of unattainable.
Yeah.
And he doesn't quite understand where her feelings are at. The show keeps us in that headspace for what I honestly think is maybe a little too long.
Okay.
To where it gets to the point where it's like, okay, like we get it. But it's not going to feel like a romance if we, the audience, don't feel like both parties are equally interested, you know?
Yeah.
And obviously, a lot of romance stories have like one person likes the other person more for a little while and then something happens.
Yeah.
But it's even more like, again, not to spoil anything, there's other characters and people with feelings for other people and triangles and squares and stuff. And it for a while there, it's getting to the point where it's like, man, there's like other...
Yeah, this girl's giving a shoulder playing. Yeah,
but that's finally started to turn around. And okay. So I think you'll really like it. It just might take a little bit
to get there. Sure. All right, the next one that I want to show is My Hero Academia Vigilantes is finally getting an anime, and this is coming out in April. So this was a spin-off manga. I have not read it.
Although is it still going, or did it end a while ago?
The spinoff manga?
Yeah.
Let me scroll down to the bottom and see if I can tell you.
Because I know the main manga is over, right?
Yes, the main manga is over. And this manga ended in sometimes the way we word things on here makes it hard to I have to click another article because I'm not sure if they're talking about my no, okay. Vigilantes did end in May 2022.
So
it was still got a pretty long run. My understanding of the general premise of it is that these are like unsanctioned heroes. They don't have licenses. That's why they are vigilantes. So
true. I'm guessing it'll be a much shorter series.
Yeah, I would think so. 15 volumes is still a lot, isn't it?
Yeah. Maybe like a couple of seasons?
Yeah.
In two or three?
Yeah. All right, here we go.
I feel like My Hero Academia might be one of those properties that just got away from me, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know when I will catch up.
Yeah, I need to catch up on it too, as well. Especially because I think there was some really good stuff in the latest season. And I think I'm only maybe a season behind anyway, so it's not a huge time investment for me to catch back up to it.
Maybe I'll just read the manga.
Yeah, you could do that too.
The best way.
The manga is really, really good. The art is fantastic. People have been talking about it since Horikoshi has had time to just like draw things because he's not serializing every single week, that his art is insane.
Nice.
So that was just a short little teaser, but cool. Yeah, that's coming in April. The Japanese title isn't Vigilantes, it's Illegals, and I can understand why they changed the title of that for American audiences. It's probably a good idea.
Localization is good, everybody. Localization is good.
Yeah, so that's coming in April. The main character of that one is Koichi Himawari, and couldn't make the cut to be an official hero, so he uses his modest quirk to do good deeds in his spare time. Fateful encounter with local thugs leads them to team up with two other unlikely heroes. None of them really know what they're doing, but they've got the courage or foolishness to try.
Nice. That sounds really fun.
Yeah.
And it seems like that might be fun for like someone like me who's interested in the universe, but hasn't stayed caught up with the entire anime, but it seems like it's something you just jump into.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And then two more quick things. Spy Family Season 3 is coming in October 2025. Ooh. There's no teaser for that, but we're confirmed getting Season 3 then. And then the last one I will show a teaser for is Hell's Paradise Jigoku Raku. Does anyone remember that?
Vaguely do. It didn't really amount to much, did it? Like
Yeah, I don't think it quite took off. I want to go back and rewatch it. This was also MAPPA. And it had a lot, like a very cool environment that it was taking place in, and it ended up giving survival horror vibes.
Oh, it's like Suicide Squad Battle Royale, basically, right?
Yes. Like, yeah. That's a good way to summarize it. And let's see, it looks like we've got a teaser that we can do that has subtitles on it for season two. But season two, I think, is also scheduled for January 2026. So another long wait on that one. I'm sure MAPPA's pretty backed up right now. So,
I mean, that's fine. Take the time, MAPPA.
Take it, yeah.
Like, it's okay. Now, Spy Family, have we gotten any word on if that's, like, going to be ending soon or...
I don't think so. Let me turn the volume down on that a little bit.
Looks pretty.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that the Spy Family manga is still running. I mean, it's the kind of premise that you can just keep going with, I feel like, for a really long time, too.
Yeah. I know that Jump hasn't been, like, they've seemed much more interested in more, like, mid-length series over the last few years. Is this one even still going? I thought didn't this wrap up?
Let me find
out. Or is it still running? I feel like so many series get canceled, but
It ended in January 2021.
Yeah.
So 13 volumes, about the same length as Vigilantes. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Okay, so I think that makes it up for the news, James. Why don't we first talk about the finale of season one of Dawn to Dawn. Now, I titled this video, The Cliffhanger is Cruel, because they're making us wait so long, although we do confirmed have a second season for July.
Six months. Seven months.
James, we speculated for a while where they were going to close this out at. And I'll this is where I suspected it was. I'm like, they're going to break open the wall and that's going to be it.
It got to the point, especially last week, where it was clear that they weren't going to be chopping or rearranging anything, which in this case, I think is fine.
Yeah.
Because like we've talked about, having read the manga, there is stuff from all of these recent episodes that is relevant.
Yeah.
And so to cut any of it or to save it for later, I think would have probably not worked. But then you also get to the point where, and this is, I said this in my review, I think the only downside is to this being a cliffhanger, especially for people that haven't read the manga, is where it's an awkward ending point because we're kind of like at the beginning of a new story.
Yeah.
Instead of like wrapping up one story and then teasing another. We spend a lot of time like basically this feels very much like episode one of a new little storyline.
Yeah.
And then right when stuff starts to get intense, cut to credits.
Yeah.
And especially if you haven't read the manga and maybe you don't plan on reading the manga, you're just gonna have to wait 6 months with Momo getting in the situation she's in.
Yeah.
They knew what they were doing. They're definitely like trying to leave us in suspense.
Yes. Yeah. And so I'm of two minds on this being the ending point for it. I think breaking the wall open is a great cliffhanger to end on. I like stopping it right there. For all the criticism the series got for its first episode, it does seem not in the best taste to leave Momo where she's at the end of it, because it is, again, it's another scene of implied potential sexual assault, right? Especially with what they say to her and stuff. When they start talking about gators, like, you know what a gator is? It's men who target women alone in baths and stuff. Now, you and I have both read the manga and can feel secure about what happens there. But for those who haven't, I could see that leaving a pretty bad taste in their mouth.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. I think, like you said, having read the manga, I know what's going to happen. And so, that's not necessarily where my mind would have jumped. I think for me, even if I hadn't read the manga, I don't think I would necessarily personally, and obviously it's going to be very different for every viewer. And I think, and like you said, the show is playing with imagery that is meant to feel threatening.
Yes.
And so if people take that to its logical conclusion, I don't think that's unfair at all. Mm-hmm. That said, I think the show has done a good enough job of establishing its tone that even if I hadn't read the manga, I don't think I would ever really believe that the show would actually cross any of those lines in a way that would feel legitimately gross. Or exploitative, like that's something that I could maybe see happening, and it's totally different, but like Chainsaw Man would maybe have something that intense.
Yes.
Right. Something that like dark and serious where you can't tell any jokes after that.
Yeah.
You can't have any goofy tonal shifts and interjections. Like that's something, even if it wasn't like full on, even if it was just right up against the line and Momo thought she was like really, really in danger and the show wanted us to think, that's something where at least for like an episode or two, you got to take it very seriously. And I think because the show has been so upfront about being a comedy and a reverent one,
right,
that, uses kind of schlocky pulpy tropes, I at least would know that like when I tune back in July, I don't think anything that truly upsetting is going to happen, because I don't think Don Dadon could be Don Dadon after that,
Sure. Yeah. I think it makes sense to say that if that were the bridge they were going to cross, then Don Dadon can't really be a comedy anymore. Now you've entered into Heavenly Delusion territory where where it's like, that's okay. And
now we're here and now we got to live in that. And now this has, and Heavenly Delusion is such a good comparison, because for the problems I had with the way that show handled some of its material, it took it seriously.
It did take it very seriously. And I think the director of the anime probably did a good job with that. But I do also know that manga readers, once it crossed that line, a lot of people weren't happy with how they treated the material in the manga version, as far as whether they took it seriously enough afterwards. So, however, I do think part of what makes this scene feel so chilling, especially I think maybe from a female perspective as well, is that this feels like a legitimate danger. So we know with the men that come into the bath that they're very much not human, right? They established that very early on when they show the group of them. They've got this sort of weird, almost jaundiced looking skin tone and glowing eyes. They don't look like regular humans that we've seen in the show. It's communicating with us that these aren't human men, that, you know, that they're a monster of some kind or an alien of some kind or something like that. So the hope is, but we've seen aliens dabble in it, threat of sexual assault as well. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't immediately mean like that they won't within the story. But the first thing that they do is appears that they're going to try and drown her. They're holding her down underwater. But everything is still got a tinge of sexual violence to it, from how they enter, from what they say, and just the fact that she's in a very vulnerable position. She's alone in, you know, she's not expecting Okarun or Gigi to come in at any minute. They're not going to be coming to get her. Mm-hmm. Like, they haven't agreed to meet or anything, so we can't rely on them to run in. And so it was uncomfortable. And I think I don't know if I've done this intentionally, but I didn't remember this part of the manga. Like, once it started happening, I was like, oh yeah, she does go to the bath and get attacked at the bath. But
yeah,
it's something that I think when you're reading this, not week to week, but in big chunks, like I did to catch up, you get the resolution so quickly that you move past it faster as a reader.
But whereas, to be stuck on it like this, where it's lingering and there is no resolution.
Yeah, there's no resolution until July. I don't have a problem with them including this. I just wish they would have arranged scenes in such a way that maybe this was didn't start happening until July, so that it just, so the length between getting the resolution for viewers wasn't as long to make them sit with the potential implications of it.
So let me ask you something, because I'm thinking about this. Do you feel like it would have been, because I totally agree with you that it is, you know, just by virtue of the medium of television, the moment has a different impact than if you only have to like wait a week to read the follow-up chapter.
Yes.
And I can't even, I don't have the manga in front of me. I can't even remember if this moment was like a chapter cliffhanger or if it was just like a scene.
Sure. I don't recall either. Yeah.
But do you feel like her being alone in the bath and just the guys like leering at her, kind of creeping up on her before they like descend on her, what do you feel like that would have made it more palatable, or would that have maybe actually?
Oh, like if they entered the bath, but we didn't see them get in the water sort of situation. Yeah.
Would that have left too much to the imagination, or do you think it would have been preferable to at least avoid the literal physical harm being the focal point of that moment?
I think if we saw them approaching into the bath and like it was their eyes, but they hadn't come in yet, would have been better. Mm. I think for me, it is specifically like combining their actions with the gator comment that really leads you in that direction. And there are certain spaces for people that just where you it feels more frightening and visceral to be with what appears to be a violent antagonist male force as a woman. One of them is obviously the bath. Another one would be like a dark parking lot. Mm-hmm. There's just like certain like go-tos where you're like, I never feel safe here. And I always need to have something in my hand. Right? Yep. Sort of situation. And so I think this is packed with a lot of
loaded.
And I think maybe culturally it goes, you know, cross-cultural for spaces where you just, it feels scarier, even compared to Momo being, if this had happened in the hallway of her school at night, that probably wouldn't freak me out nearly as much, because that's like a haunted ghost setting. It's very different when it's a bath or a parking lot.
And you know, to the point you just made, yes, they're very obviously weird, probably supernatural, creepy things, but they also are much more men than like the Serpians, right? They're obviously just wearing like people suits.
Yeah. Chris Francis in the chat brings up a good point, because there is a woman with them, and we see women in the larger group when they're like in that forested area. And if it's a mixed, they say it's a mixed gender bath. If the men had gone in along with one of the women, it may have not felt as sexually charged.
I think that's fair.
If it wasn't just the male members of the group. Yeah.
I will say, I think everything you said is 1,000% makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. And it's something I think about all the time, just when we're reviewing shows, is I always try to ask myself, you know, because like you said, like I'm a guy, right?
Yeah.
And so this is one of those things where I can only really think of it abstractly. Mm-hmm. It's not something I have that visceral connection to.
Yeah.
And so I think that it's always really good to be reminded of those things. Yeah. But also, I do think one thing the show has done that hopefully will continue to do, and I think it's really a holdover from the manga, but I think the show has actually enhanced it, is that at the very least, and I don't think this takes away from any of the discomfort or the visceralness or the kind of intrinsic reaction that people have to this kind of imagery and this kind of situation. Mm-hmm. But I think because we've talked how it's actually a surprising through line how, even though I personally don't think the show has gone too far over any kind of line where it can't really come back from when it comes to the way it depicts this stuff, I think it's really interesting that thematically it does really seem to be a through line that keeps coming up.
Yeah.
Not necessarily the exploitative use of that kind of assault, but actually more like the exploration of it. I think Dandadan is, especially for a Shonen Jump action series, really empathetic for the experience of being a woman in a world where just going down the wrong alley can get you killed.
Yeah.
Or borrowing money from the wrong guy can get you killed. Being a little girl whose mother, you know, like all of these things, like the way that the world is almost naturally, and in this case, supernaturally predisposed to exploit the dangers of womanhood, which, if anything, at the very least, I don't think the show, and I can't think of anything in the manga off the top of my head, I don't think it would ever be necessarily exploitative to the degree of being dehumanizing, right?
Yeah.
And I hope it wouldn't reduce itself to just like using sexual assault and things of that nature as just pure shock value.
Yeah.
But I do think you're right that this is probably the closest it's come, simply by virtue of, again, where it chose to leave off, instead of just concluding the scene with another 30 seconds or another minute of footage.
Yeah. Heaven or Hell in the chat says they went and checked the manga as far as like the pacing of the chapter. And they said they checked the manga and it actually doesn't leave Momo in that situation. So this is something that like occurs mid chapter and is resolved before the chapter ends as well.
That sounds about right. That because I couldn't remember there being like a mom. I remember the hole in the wall, but I couldn't really remember. I remember the fight in the bath, but I can't remember there being like a big cliffhanger about it.
Yeah.
So that's interesting.
Yeah. So that was purely a kind of a TV decision to end it there. Maybe they thought that would be more shocking, and then as a cliffhanger to leave her in that situation until July. But anyway, my point is mostly that was a choice, and people are going to have different opinions on that choice. Yeah. I would have liked them to not end right there with everyone kind of hanging on what's going to happen to Momo.
That's because we already have the cliffhanger. It takes away from Gigi's role in the story.
Yeah.
Because this is really where we got a taste of it at the beginning of the episode, where we see that like he's really struggling with this. It's haunting.
Yes.
And in the manga, the breaking open of the wall was like the shit gets real moment, where it's like, oh, there's something really messed up going on in your life, Gigi, and it's probably not going to be an easy fix.
Yeah, it's why you're seeing some creepy purple dude in your nightmares, which I'm presuming that's going to be that entity's color for going forward. Is it's going to be
purple.
But yeah, I could see, you know, if they could figure out the timing, like actually having the confrontation and Momo defeating them at the bath, and then at the same time, that's when they start breaking open the wall. So like Momo's trying to rush back to the house to mm-hmm. tell them what happened at the same time that they've discovered the creepy hole in the wall. And that would still make it line up.
It just became a fight, right?
Yeah.
Even if it just got to the point where Momo was fighting them.
Yeah.
Like, but not
being drowned. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Where yeah. it was more like, okay, when we get back, she's going to have to psychic punch these dudes or whatever.
Yeah.
And she's still in that vulnerable place. And it's still like a group of guys trying to beat up a teenage girl. But mm-hmm. The tone of it is not about her peril. It's about, oh, like what's she going to do to beat up these guys?
Yeah. Yeah. There were other parts of the episode, though. I know we like jumped on the heavy bits first. Like I did enjoy Gigi and Okoroon playing soccer and getting into the game of I win over who
likes Momo more.
Who likes Momo more, and getting into this stupid playground argument about, well, I already said her face, so you can't say her eyes. Well, and anyway, that was just silly. Gigi still like the master of poses. Like,
another shout out to the dub, by the way, because yeah. the line reading of Gigi saying "I win" is one of the funniest things I've heard all week.
Yeah, yeah,
such a goof.
And I guess before we move on to Orb, we could watch the little teaser for the next season, which came out like a couple days after the episode itself. So let me get that going. It kind of alleviates some of the stress because. Well, you'll just be able to see in the trailer. So here we go.
Gigi no ie mita? Tobu baba teki ni dou yo? Arya dame da na. Ano ie wa ningen no chi ga shimikomi sugite.
LFR, yeah, season 2 is this summer.
やれやれ 本気出すぜ
Man, that
we're getting some wild anime.
Oh, that whole sequence is going to be so good, Lindsay.
Yeah,
it's going to be
yeah.
so good. A very interesting I know why they chose to make the font that way.
Yeah.
But without context it is kind of funny.
Yeah, it is. And look, it's the volcano we talked about. Does he kind of look like Sukuna from Jujutsu Kaisen to you?
A little bit. I do think it's funny that literally the first image of that teaser is Momo being fine.
Yes.
And so again, that's not like a spoiler, right? Like they're not going to kill one of the main characters of the show.
Mm-hmm. No.
Between seasons, guys, come on. No. But also I think maybe the show is also trying to be like, don't worry guys, like it'll be fine. Like
yeah. She's going to be okay. But yeah, also, you know, completely avoid trailers, in which case they don't maybe haven't seen that. But yeah, if you're like really really worried, yeah, it's going to be okay. All right. So, I caught up an Orb mm-hmm. for us specifically so we could talk about it more. I thought these two episodes were actually pretty dang good, other than the fact that episode 13, 12 is really dark and you can't see what's going on like for almost all of it.
So anyone that follows me on Blue Sky will know that I'm just becoming more and more radicalized about modern media's inability to film things at night, even when yeah. those things don't physically exist and you can light them however you want.
Right.
I don't know what that's about. I thought I honestly didn't love episode 12.
Uh-huh.
Episode 13, right? The most recent one? Yeah. That's the most I've enjoyed the show honestly in a while.
Yeah.
I think we talked about this maybe episode before last. I've had like a really weird, like I guess teeter-tottering kind of opinion of Orb lately, where there are parts of it that I think are really, really cool and interesting, but the whole product, with almost every passing week, I'm starting to like a lot less.
Okay.
But this week brought back a lot of the stuff that I really liked, and it's like, oh, where's this show been for the last several weeks? But then I think a lot of it just comes down to Bedeni, man. I just don't
like that Bedeni, and
about him. When it's like, oh no, he's gonna get tortured. All right. Okay.
The guy put wax in his eye already by choice.
Yeah. He doesn't care. Like he's been prepared for this. Whatever. He's fine. If he was any other character, I think I would be so much more invested in what's going on.
He does try to save Oxy's ass in this.
Yeah.
Like when push came to shove, he tried to avoid Oxy getting tortured more and take it on upon himself, which I didn't think he was capable of as a human being, just based on his personality up to this point.
I guess I think a part of it is, I mean, let's be clear, they're both dead. I don't know. This isn't me saying I've never read the manga. I have no idea what happens. But I mean, Novak straight up says, like, no, yes, you're going to die. We're going to kill you, obviously. you attacked us and you're heretics and you've been studying, you know, blah, blah, blah. You're definitely going to die.
And you drug my daughter into it.
Yes.
Like, he's real upset about that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And so a part of it's like, we've already seen that this show is not afraid to kill off main characters. So that kind of primes you to expect, oh, they totally can die. And I genuinely do not see how these two could possibly find any way out of this, other than like literal divine intervention and someone saying, no, don't kill them. The Pope says to spare their lives.
Yeah.
But unless that happens, my assumption basically from the moment this episode started is, okay, so any minute now, they're going to die. And then we're going to maybe switch to, maybe the new main character will be Yolenta. Maybe we'll get a new main character. I don't know. But that to me has almost made this part of the story feel like both exciting, but also like, all right, let's get move on. Like, come on. We all
come
know.
Come on, Noah. You know. Yeah.
You're going to start breaking some thumbs and, you know.
Get it over with. Yeah. I could see it going that way. Specifically, we know that Bedeni burned everything except for a treatise he wrote, which Noak has confiscated, and they bring it up when they bring Noak in there. My first thought is that, okay, they're both dead. Yolenta's going to get a hold of that treaty because it's in Noak's possession, and she's his daughter, and then she's going to continue on with it.
Because they've talked about how much she wants to publish something and all that stuff.
And it would be funny if she published it, I mean, under her own name, even though she didn't actually write it.
That'd be actually a good bit of irony, you know? Her first bit of publication is putting her name on Bedeni's work. I would actually appreciate that. That would be good.
Yeah, that would be good. Another alternative, which is unlikely but not impossible if you've seen enough James Bond movies or whatever, is that somehow Oxy gets his hands free and gets one of those weapons there and kills him and they escape.
Yeah, I could see that. I don't know, though. Like, the show has put so much emphasis on the fact that these are just two normal dudes. Oxy kills people for a living, and he held his own against Novak for a couple minutes.
Yeah.
But, by the way,
he could have killed Novak if those other guys didn't show up and fill him full of arrows.
It's true. Yeah. And this is a total diversion, but I have to talk about it because otherwise I'll feel like I'm a crazy person.
Okay.
I guess one example of the show being something that in concept really works for me, but in execution, I can't help but be like a nitpicky grump about.
Okay.
There's that scene in episode 12 with the cowardly Inquisitor.
Okay.
Who runs away. And stabs himself to death.
Yes. Yeah. Falls on his own sword. Yeah.
But the way that it happens.
Yeah.
Is so comical, and it's played a bit as comedy. Novak even goes, oh, are you kidding me? Which I thought was kind of weird.
Yeah.
But like to actually see it happen, that sword is like 5 feet long.
Yeah.
And so somehow that guy tripped upwards several feet so that the sword could rotate to be perfectly vertical, and then he could land on it in a downward motion, despite going in an upward arc to even be that high.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was like, one of those
trips. I mean, sometimes you can trip and you kind of hop a little as you trip, right?
That sword, that was a long sword. Yeah. He had to do a LeBron-style slam dunk jump to get that high.
Yeah.
But then also be horizontal.
Yeah. Yeah, because the sword is straight up and down. If the sword was more at a 70 degree or so angle, and then he kind of hopped onto it,
Or if he'd been holding a dagger.
Like this, and then he kind of, I'd have to rewatch it. Maybe it's like this, and kind of hops onto it, and then the motion, physics of his own body going this way, brings it with him as it's, and then,
But that's what I was thinking about this, because I've seen people compare the show to Vinland Saga. And
I did start out with that impression. Yeah.
At first I could have gone with it. At this point, not so much. Mm-hmm. But the reason for that, it's not because I think the show is inherently bad,
mm-hmm.
but that scene with the homie stabbing himself to death on his own sword like that, mm-hmm. that would have never happened in Vinland Saga. Not to say that something similar might have happened, but the difference is that to me and Orb felt like the author really wanted to make a point and do something kind of symbolic, and it was gonna happen. No mm-hmm. matter what, even if uh-huh. a character we've never met has to do something inconceivably stupid and maybe physically impossible just to make the point.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in Vinland Saga, it would have been something where it's like, oh, that was the natural consequence of his actions. And it makes perfect sense in the context of what's happening.
Yeah.
And I feel an Orb, and this episode had the least of it, which is why I liked it. Because so much of it was just characters talking, which is when the show is at its best.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you can't see a damn thing that's happening. But when Agni and Novak are talking about why heretics do what they do, and Novak literally cannot understand. He doesn't have the framework of reality to understand why someone would go against the church and risk their lives for what he perceives to be lunacy, right?
Yeah.
Obvious lunacy. Because the truth is all right here in this book. Why would you, what are you doing? Yeah. Whereas for Agzi, it's the complete opposite. He's had his eyes opened to a truth that makes the world better than what that book presents. And he can't go back.
Mm-hmm.
That's fascinating. I love that.
Yeah.
But then the show does stuff where it's homeboy's going to trip on a sword to make Novak look more preternaturally intelligent and world, and it's just what are we doing, show? We don't need that. You could have, that didn't need to happen. We could have just focused more on the fight between Agzi and Novak, but I don't know.
I liked it because it was funny, but that's about it.
It was funny
that he just tripped on his own fucking sword and just completely biffed it. First day on the job, biffed it the worst way possible, No, I did like the conversations between Agzi and Novak. And I did like the conversation in the earlier episode where Agzi was like, yo, Badeni, if you don't let anyone read your shit, then aren't you just as self-absorbed and close-minded as the people that you're criticizing? You have to let people attempt to test and look at your work and see if it holds up to scrutiny, which I thought that part was really cool. I wanted to know what you thought about Ogsy's near-death dream where he's in the Tower of Babel, it appears. And I don't understand this.
So this is another one of those things where in concept, I totally get, or not totally, that's me. I feel like I get what they're doing, right?
Yeah.
Ogsy has demonstrated that he is someone who is the uneducated. He represents the potential of the uneducated man, right?
Yeah.
He's been denied the opportunity to learn and to grow because of this society, because of these systems and all that stuff. But if he was given that opportunity, he could give so much to the world, right?
Mm-hmm.
He could write books and share all these stories. And so I liked the idea that his near-death kind of vision was going to school. The thing that people literally laugh at him for even wanting to do.
Yeah.
But in execution, it's one of those things where I'm still where did this guy come from?
Well, I noticed that he doesn't have a face at no point during his.
Is he supposed to be someone that we like that we've seen before?
I don't think so. I think it's one of those dream logic things where you can't really see faces, but you just know who people are, kind of thing. Because this guy never has a face. He just wakes up in a university kind of setting, and he's being lectured to, and then he gets chastised a little bit for falling asleep, but we don't see the instructor's face. And then they talk a bit, and he sees that he's in the Tower of Babel, because he says we're building up to heaven. And so famously, commonly, the story of Babel is supposed to be a parable about man's arrogance to think that we could, through our own knowledge and means, reach the heights of divinity. Mm-hmm. And that's why God gave everyone different languages so that we could no longer communicate with one another. And that's why we babble at each other now. Mm-hmm. I had to do the glasses for that.
A little bit of historical context there.
A little bit of historical context. With that in mind, it was confusing to me because it's like, are you trying to say that Oxy's aspirations are foolhardy and arrogant because they're taking place in this tower that was supposed to represent humanity's arrogance? Or is it trying to say that actually that biblical story is wrong and that man should aspire to reach the heights of heaven through his own means?
Well, and also it's one of the things I was thinking was, if this is just a dream he's having, does this really feel like a, because it's one of those like writerly things where it's the kind of dream that's full of like symbolic meaning. And it's like very dramatically convenient because it's two characters talking about something that makes basic sense.
Yeah.
But is that actually what Oxy would dream about? Like, would he be having this like internal debate about his motivations for doing what he's doing? Mm-hmm. Especially since the way it presents it is almost like, no, Oxy, you're not just doing this for yourself. You have a greater ideal. But you have to figure it out for yourself. And it's like, is that something Oxy is like internally telling himself? Why? You know, he couldn't read a couple of weeks ago. Like,
we still don't know how time works in this show.
It's one of those like, wait, or is this like a vision? Is this like a supernatural thing?
I was starting to lean towards that a bit too, because I mean, again, when he wakes up in school, and he's gazing upon his teacher, the room is filled with this like golden lights being cast out from him upon him. And again, the teacher that he's speaking to doesn't have a face, right? It's just talking him through these thoughts, and he's near death. So is it a dream while he's, you know, passed out? Is it an actual religious experience that he's having to some degree that is perhaps showing the misguided limitations of knowledge by the church compared to that of God himself? God would want you to seek knowledge and better yourself and attain higher learning and things like that. And it's actually the church as an organization that's wrong. So, I mean, that's interesting to pick at. I don't know if any of that was intentional, but that's stuff that I like with media. I like picking at that kind of stuff.
And that reminds me, I had a question that I really wanted to ask you.
Okay.
Because it's the kind of nerdy thing that I could pretty much only ask you because we're the ones watching the show.
Yeah.
And it's something I've been thinking about a lot as the vices have been tightening around our heroes. Do you feel, how do I phrase this? Because I don't want to sound like I'm even necessarily framing it as a criticism, more of like a thought experiment. Do you feel like the show's subject matter, the heliocentrism, the battle against the church and all that stuff, do you feel like it has been noticeably affected? I don't even know if I want to say made worse, but do you feel like the fact that it's being written from a perspective that presumably statistically doesn't have that same religious background, and even if they were one of like the 1% or 0.5% of Christians in Japan, culturally does not have that same relationship with the dogma of religion because I was talking about this with my friend the other day. The funny thing about the way that like the Catholic Church is always used as like the bad guy in like every anime ever.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that Japan has like no relationship with the Catholic Church because they killed all the missionaries and kicked them out. And so,
yeah, I was thinking about
the church as like a bureaucracy, right?
Right.
And so the church is always framed in terms that I feel like make a lot of sense to the Japanese, mm-hmm. where it's about the tradition and the societal expectations and the bureaucratic Kafka-esque like corruption of it, which mm-hmm. that's universal. But something that I've very rarely seen tackled in a way that I think feels right to someone that has grown up in America. Yeah. And lives in the Midwest and can see, I think, a lot more closely that tradition of puritanical, dogmatic, not just like the cultural part of it, but the truly reality defining, this is the way the world works. This set of magical rules and these divine figures will determine my actions and the beliefs that I have and the people that I choose to see as my friends and my foes and all that mm-hmm. stuff. I feel like we're a lot closer to that.
Yeah.
And do you feel like when they're having these conversations about the church and about reality and like, why would you study heliocentrism? Does it feel like someone writing about like Catholicism from kind of an outside perspective in that way? Am I making sense?
Yes. No. And a bit, right? Because even with Novak and all the other characters that we've encountered, the Catholic approved point of view for history is not, it's accepted as, well, that's just how it is because we say so. Rachel H. or Heaven or Hell in the chat said church equals government. Like it's a more of a government mandate.
Yeah.
But we haven't really seen zealotry.
Yes.
Like in the way that I think we maybe have experienced even in
zealotry to systems.
We see right? zealotry like, no one is using scripture as a bludgeon. Yes. There's no one showing up in this who starts reciting something from the Old Testament or the New Testament or whatever as the justification for why they can do something absolutely heinous, which is what I would expect. Right. Like I would expect Novak to like talk about stepping on the head of the snake right before he like smacks them with a cudgel or something like that. Well, that's not really happening.
That's you totally nailed it. I think you totally articulated what I've been feeling because Dan Harmon in many of his podcasts, he talks about the way that Middle Ages Europe was about Christianity, right? Mm-hmm. Where everyone by our standards was a fanatic.
Yes.
Like, right. Even the most liberal out there woo-wee-woo like person to their standards would to us seem like a complete fanatic when it comes to religion, right? Because for pretty much everyone on that part of the world, that was just reality. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just that, oh, they believe in heliocentrism. That's not what the rules say.
Yeah.
That's evil.
Right.
And they've sprinkled that in where Novak says, if you were possessed by the devil, I could see why you go to the heresy. But no, that's how a samurai would talk about it in like a samurai story, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like he should be genuinely afraid that forces of supernatural darkness are threatening to undo humanity.
Right. Yeah. Like the way he just seems like sort of perturbed by the idea that they've been interacting with his daughter, as opposed to having a boiling over rage at the temptation of destroying her purity and maidenhood as required her to keep until marriage by God and like those sorts, especially because they're two men.
I mean, we all know that women are more naturally susceptible to the temptations of the devil, right? That's just like...
Absolutely, right? I mean, that's why we took the apple and then gave it to you.
Original sin. How could you do it to us, Lindsay? Come on.
The knowledge just seemed so good. so, yeah, they just... That is an element that's missing. And I imagine that if Orb were instead adapted into some prestige live-action television drama, that would be in it.
Oh my gosh, imagine like Ralph Fiennes as like Badeni with the tonsure and everything.
Yeah,
he'd be so good in that role.
Yeah, he would
maybe get like Tom Holland as Oxy or like, you know, some like fresh-faced younger guy.
Yeah, Oh, I feel like no, for Oxie, you need someone who looks like he's been like punched in the face a few times. So you get Barry Keoghan for that, but he's got to like do a different accent or something.
I've been so traumatized by Killing of a Sacred Deer and the Banshees of Inisherin,
yeah,
that I feel like if Barry Keoghan came on screen, I would think he was a demon. I'd be like, oh no.
It's so funny because he's hot and Saltburn. So
I haven't seen that one.
Yeah. But yeah, you got to get someone who looks like he's been punched in the face several times or something. Like,
oh, you know who'd be perfect? Is it not Taron Egerton, the other Egerton?
I don't know either of the Edgertons.
Taron Egerton was Kingsman, I think. But the guy who did The Gift, he directed The Gift. He has the perfect Oxy face. I've just cast it.
Taron or his brother?
No.
I like that we've both gone with like Welsh Irish actors for this role.
I think he's, one sec. You're gonna see his face and you're gonna think, oh, it's perfect. It's mm-hmm. I'm so
someone close. In chat says Joel
Edgerton. Yes, look up Joel Edgerton.
Okay. Yeah. And he's also older because Oxy at this point is graying, right? He has gray hair through his black ponytail and stuff. So I mean, he's like,
well, I mean, I got some of those gray hairs.
I've got them too. They're just short now that I got a haircut, but I've got them.
See a couple of them
all through my temples and whatnot. Yeah, yeah. Joel is 50, but then Taron is 35. They're brothers?
No, I don't. Are they? I don't think they're related. Are they?
Oh, maybe they're not related.
I think they just have the same last name.
Oh yeah, Joel is Australian and Taron is Welsh, so very unlikely. Unless their parents were, you know, like globetrotters or something like that. Someone, can we call up Netflix and see if they'll also opt this show for a live action treatment? Because this show would be amazing as live action television with 45 minute episodes.
Yeah, and maybe like a couple of freaking spotlights stationed positioned very carefully.
We can't count on Netflix to do that for live action anymore than we could for.
No one can. The HBO can't do it. Mm-mm. It's like, it's honestly, Hollywood, just hire me. Just stick me in a room. Show me all your nighttime scenes and I will let you know if you need to fix them. All right.
Too dark. Fix that. Too dark.
There's a Robert Eggers. He can get away with it.
Yeah.
All right. His DP knows what he's doing.
We're never going to get through a podcast episode without bringing up Robert Eggers. I already made plans with my mom to go see Nosferatu Christmas Day.
I've got the tickets.
You're going Christmas Day too? Reserved.
Yes, we are.
Yeah, I'm going to see the 3:45 in the afternoon show, which, I mean, it'll be dark by the time we come out of there because Christmas.
Oh, yeah. I mean, West Coast winter. Yeah, it's dark by like 1 p.m.
Yeah. All right, everybody, I think that wraps it up for this week. Let's see, what next Tuesday is New Year's Eve, and James, I'll talk to you about that. I actually wouldn't mind doing this on New Year's Eve, but because I'm a loser and I don't have plans, but we could also do Monday again.
I was going to say Monday might work better.
Okay.
Because I'll at least have to make our traditional family New Year's dinner.
Oh, okay. Yeah, then let's do Monday again. So we'll be back again on Monday, the 30th, I don't know what we'll talk about. Dawn to Dawn's over. We'll watch a movie or something. I don't know.
Yeah, or we could maybe talk about what we're the most excited for in this upcoming season. That'd be right before the big...
That's true.
...review guide rush.
Yeah. All right, everybody. We'll see you next week. Thanks for tuning in. Bye.
Adios.
The ANN After Show is an official podcast of Anime News Network. You can hang out with us live on Tuesdays at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern on YouTube and Twitter. Listen to our podcast on Spotify or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. The ANN After Show is hosted by Lindsay Loveridge and James Beckett and is produced by Lindsay Loveridge.